Welcome to Authors of the Pacific Northwest, where we connect Pacific Northwest authors with new listeners and provide advice for aspiring authors on the business of writing. I'm your host, Vicki J. Carter. So hi there, podcast listeners. Thank you so much for coming back to the Authors of the Pacific Northwest podcast. Today I have Trish Heinrich, and I probably have said it wrong. So Trish, say hello to everybody and correct your last name if I said it wrong, please.
You said it perfectly. Hi, I'm Trish Heinrich. It's wonderful to be here.
Awesome. Well, I'm so glad you're here. So Trish, we usually start out with a little bit of introduction. So first tell us, it's a two-part question. So the first part is, what state in the Pacific Northwest do you live in? And if you have a job outside of being an author, what is that job, if you can share it with us?
So I live in Washington State. I live on the Kitsap Peninsula. So it's accessible by ferry from Seattle, or you can drive around, you know, from Tacoma. I do have a job outside of being an author. Yeah, I'm a stay-at-home mom.
That is a big job.
Yes.
The biggest job.
My youngest daughter is going to start kindergarten in the fall. So the life will change. I will have so much more time. But yeah, I'm a stay-at-home mom and everything that entails.
That's awesome. I was a stay-at-home mom for quite some time, and I was pretty productive in the writing world, but I missed human contact, adult life. So when my oldest started back into started in kindergarten, that's when I started my career outside of work, outside of the home. And it's a lot to juggle, but you know, us moms, no matter what you're doing, it's a lot to juggle.
It is. There's so much. It's a little bit of everything, actually.
Yeah. So I also asked this kind of stumping question, and this isn't one I prepare my authors for because I love the reaction I get from it. So Trish, tell us what you would like readers to know about you right up front.
Oh, well, that is a good question. I really love talking about independent publishing. I love encouraging authors, whatever their path to publication is. And I also have a real soft spot for author moms because it is such an incredibly difficult balancing act. And my kind of tagline for my website and my emails, any kind of social media stuff I do, is mother author hero.
I saw that. I love that.
Thank you. And I really try to hone in on those three areas. That's awesome. What they need to know.
Well, I was certainly drawn to you. I found you. I don't remember how I found, I can never remember how I find my authors anymore for this podcast. Either they come to me, somebody recommends them, or I find them, I stalk them. And and I was like immediately drawn to you because of that tagline, because us, moms or dads, regardless, if you're doing, you know, more than one job, you have to become superhuman, it feels like at times.
Yeah, exactly.
So what have you published, and then share with us your titles and what genre you're in, or what genres you're in.
So right now I am writing in the superhero urban fantasy category.
Which I love.
Thank you. It's an interesting niche, actually, because there is so much crossover with paranormal and urban fantasy. But right now it's mainly the superhero aspect of those genres. And I have published three full-length novels, two short stories in a different genre, in the pulp adventure genre, and then a novella, which is exclusive to newsletter subscribers.
Okay, cool. So Trish, will you explain to me what pulp fiction is? I know what it is, but some readers might not. And it used to be a big buzzword when that movie was out, right? And so pulp fiction, everything, pulp fiction. And I'm like, what is it? Define, if we can, what that might be.
No, it's it can be a lot of different things. But in this context, it's the adventure stories, like your old-fashioned Flash Gordon, Journey to the Center of the Earth. Mm-hmm. It's got a lot in common with steampunk. So there are airships, and there are Tesla guns, and it's a lot of adventure. So the anthology that I contributed to are all kinds of different short stories in the pulp genre. So you've got horror, you've got adventure, you've got mystery, you've got this big world. And the person that we all wrote for, he has created a world out of his role-playing games. And he's got novels in the world, and he's like, hey, let's do an anthology. Yeah. So he asked me to do two stories. And I wrote one about a female stunt pilot in the early 1920s who goes back home after a stint in Hollywood and discovers that the farm where she's living has been overrun with zombies.
Oh, I love it.
And so her and her friend are going to try to figure out how do we defeat the zombies. And then the other one I wrote was, he wanted me to focus on more of the superhero pulp aspect. I thought, okay, I can do that.
Yeah.
And I wrote a story about a little girl who was very sickly and poor, and her brother goes missing. And so she has to go find him, and one of this famous, the city's famous vigilantes shows up, and the vigilante and this little girl team up, and they free her brother and a couple other boys that are being held captive by the nefarious Red Hood, I think is the name of the villain. So it was a lot of fun. Pulp stories are very fast paced. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of fat, I guess you could say, in the story. So it was a good challenge. It was also a really good writing exercise.
I can imagine. And so you probably have to do if you do a time period like your 1920s, you'd probably have to do a little bit of research in to make it fit the time period, but then you get to go off in creativity with zombies. I mean, like, there's no real research out there for zombies. Yeah. You just make it up, right?
Yeah, well, and he does have a lot of world building. It's alternate history. So his 1920s, it does have the First World War, but you've got airships everywhere. And you've got you know, the zombies are created out of his role-playing game. So I had to ask him, I said, okay, what kind of zombies are you wanting me to write about? So there was research, but it wasn't of exactly the historical kind. It was more, what's your world that you want me to put into the story? So
that's super cool. I won't admit how far into my 40s, but I'm into my 40s. I'm just now getting into the role-playing thing. My oldest daughter and my son-in-law are very, very big into role-play. That's how they kind of form their whole friendship groups, is all around it. And just, they're moving back to my area. So they've always had clubs that they've done, you know, role play almost monthly, if not weekly. Uh-huh. And so they introduced me to one very famous one and got me into it. And I'm like, why have I not discovered this before? Probably because I'm too busy being a mother and all this other stuff. And so I love it that I have geeky kids, because I get to do that with them. Cause I'm like, I'm all into like computers, and they are too. We're very geeks in our family, but so much fun. So I think that'd be fascinating to write for role playing, you know, trilogy like that or something. That'd be so fascinating.
It was a lot of fun. And I love his games. He's a good friend of mine. So I play his games a lot too.
Super cool. Well, you'll have to share with me the link for the games so that I can share with my kids, because I'm sure that if they don't already know about it, right, they'll probably be eating that up.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. They're wonderful.
So let's talk about the publication journey for you. You mentioned already that you love to support people that are independent publishing. So I'm guessing that's your route. Is that correct? Or am I just guessing?
No, that's what I chose to do. It was a bit of a difficult decision. I've started and stopped the author journey about three times since I've had kids. And
I'm still there. I think it's the sixth time now.
it's hard, right? Sometimes the timing just doesn't work. And originally, I really was gung-ho for traditional publishing.
Yeah.
And that was really in the really early days of the e-reader. I think the Kindle had just come out. And I remember very vividly a writer's conference I went to, and there were some of us in the camp staunchly saying, this isn't going to last 6 months.
Yeah.
And there were others that were like, this is the best thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And then a year later, going back to the same writers conference, it was incredible how many indie authors there suddenly were.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then I forget exactly what happened, but I ended up not going back to acting, because that is where my my roots are. That's a whole nother story. But anyway.
Oh, you might have to dive into that someday in the another podcast.
Okay.
That story.
Okay, no problem.
I may be branching out on topics for listeners, just so you know.
Okay. But when I, so in 2015, that I just decided, you know what, I need to write. So I did National Novel Writing Month, NaNoWriMo. Yes.
I'm so excited for this year because I'm going to do it this year. I'm going to take time off from everything and that's all I'm going to do. So I'm so super excited.
It is a rush. Let me tell you, it's such a rush. But I did it and I didn't know what I was going to do, if I was going to do anything with the book or not. And then at the end of it, I had a really long talk with my husband and said, because we had talked about, you know, I'm going to probably need to go back to work part-time because my youngest is starting to get to that age where that could be viable. And I said, look, I said, I want to try this instead. I want to try to be an author for a few years instead. And that's when I really started taking a hard look and researching traditional publishing versus independent publishing, the pros, the cons, and listening to authors that were hybrid authors, which is a little bit of both, listening to authors that were independent, who had been traditionally published and why they were now independent. And it just became really clear to me that that was the right path for me.
I love it. I started out on this journey and this podcast doing the podcast to research about specifically independent publishing. But also I wanted to hear perspectives of other authors. So I've gone through this metamorphosis already where I went, oh man, indie, all for me, indie, all the way. That's, I'm just a control freak. That's what I want to do. And then I meet these other authors that are working with smaller publication houses and they're getting really great treatment. And I'm like, wait a minute, maybe I should do that. And then I'm just back and forth. I'm like, Pinky, first you have to write the darn books. And that's kind of where I'm like, I tend to be drawn to independent publishing because I like the idea of it, but it's so much work.
It is.
Not that I'm afraid of work. Trust me, I love working. But currently now with the podcast and work for my day job and my life, I feel like I have four full-time jobs. And so I'm like, how do you pair them down? So talk with me about that for you. How do you balance it all? I mean, because you've made a commitment. It's either this or you got to go back to work in, you know, outside of home.
it's a challenge. As my girls have gotten more independent, I have an 8 and a 5-year-old. So as they've gotten more independent, that has helped. But I have a schedule and it's the only way I can do it. I treat it like a job.
Good.
And that's so good. When I was first starting out, what I decided to do is I had this massive novel. So in 30 days, I had written a 90,000 word novel.
Wow.
Yeah. But about 75% of that went to the trash bin because it was just, it was all over the place. So as I was trying to get a handle on revising this big book, I decided, okay, I am going to look at marketing, because if I can't monetize this, there's no point, right?
Exactly.
And so I wanted to know what I'd be getting into. If it was something that I wanted to do, if it was something that I thought I could viably learn. And the more I got into it, the more I realized, yeah, this is a lot of work, but man, am I loving it. I didn't realize how exciting it was to learn about ad copy and I kind of love this and you know, like reader targeting and audience targeting. And I'm like, I never would have thought like I would be so into it that I would buy books and listen to hours worth of podcasts of people.
Oh, I know. The podcasts alone have changed everything for me, right? Because it's like, when I looked at this years ago before Amazon, so this is how long ago it had been. Before Amazon, I wasn't even considering it. I was going to go traditional for sure. But then I knew the traps of traditionally, it's hard to get in. But since the whole Amazon, all this kind of stuff, and then the podcast, lots and lots, there's very good podcasts out there. So mine that I'm doing right here is, I feel, beginner podcast, but there's some very, very good podcasts out there that talk about how to do this. And I'm like, I can do that. I get so energized. I can do it. I can.
Yeah.
So, I'm fascinated that you're in love with marketing, because a lot of the authors that I talk to, a lot of independent authors, are not necessarily in love with the marketing. So listeners, if you, when you get this, go on to Trisha's website. You'll love her website. I was totally in love with your book covers, your characters, you know, the female roles that you're putting up is just awesome. So talk to me a little bit about how you did that. Do you work with somebody? Do you work with an artist? Are you working by yourself for your design, your cover designs? Or, I mean, is this a whole new you didn't know existed that you could do it?
Oh gosh. Well, I know. I knew my limitations kind of going in as far as that goes. But my good friend, so the friend that I wrote the stories for the anthology for that does the role-playing games, he's been a graphic designer for 30 years.
Oh, so it helps to have a friend in the biz.
Yeah, and that actually, I said, how much would you charge me to design my book covers? Because I had no money at the beginning, like nothing, you know? Yeah. And he was like, I'll do it for free. And I was like, no. I was like, come on, we got to work something out. So he's like, look, you help me out with marketing and I'll do your book covers. How's that? So we're in trade. We trade with each other.
I love it.
And we work really well together. He's my husband's production partner the three of us produced a web series together several years ago. And then my husband and the cover designer's name is Todd Downing. Mm-hmm. And they do production together. So they're working on pitches for television shows. And my husband actually is not only my developmental editor, but he's the developmental editor for Todd's role-playing games.
Oh, I gotcha.
And so we have this really great, the three of us have this really great working relationship. So I asked him, and then I have another friend who lives in California, and she does web design is one of her things that she does for big companies. And mm-hmm. So I was telling her what I wanted to do and how I was kind of nervous to do a website. She's like, well, let me help you. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. So she actually went in and she's like, these are the things you want, you know, and this is how you want it to look. And so I started off with a really simple one, like maybe two pages. And then the more that I researched, I was like, all right, I want this page here and I want it to look like this. And, just kind of actually kind of stalking other authors.
That's the beauty of the internet. You can stalk so much.
Yes, exactly. And so I looked at what I liked and what I didn't like and what I wanted my brand to be, because, and that can be a scary word, like, oh my gosh, what is brand mean? What does reader targeting mean? And so if anybody's listening to this and they all of a sudden got the 1,000-yard stare, don't worry, take it in really small bite-sized chunks, because when you're first starting out, all you really need to know is, this is the kind of story I want to write. Okay. Like, that's all you've got to have, really. And then as you build on that, then you've got to figure out, okay, when people think of me, what do I want them to think of? Well, I knew I wanted them to think of, you know, female heroes in superhero books or maybe in urban fantasy books. And so that's kind of how I started. I wanted all of that front and center. That's kind of how I designed the website and it got my covers.
It's so awesome because you already had built in very creative network around you and you were smart enough to ask for help. You know what I mean? I love it. I think it's so awesome. And truly, I do love your site. I'm drawn to you just because of, you know, what you're writing about, what your site's about. I'm very big into superhero, particularly females. Wonder Woman is my ultimate. Like, oh my gosh, when that movie came out, before it came out 2 years, when I heard it was going to be released, I put it on the calendar and it was a big deal in our house that I had to go see that the minute it came out. So big deal for me.
I went by myself. It was like my mommy date. And I
did you?
I went to one of those cushy theaters that have the reclined seats and like have wine. So I got like wine and popcorn.
Nice. Well, I'll tell you, here's the cool thing, Trish, is your kids start getting older and they're actual adults. You can go to those things with them. And
yeah, I know.
That's the part of life I'm in, because both my girls enjoyed going with me and we just went and saw the Solo from Star Wars, the Solo movie last night, because I've been dying to go see it, but we've been too busy. So finally got to go see that. And my girls and I, we love doing that kind of stuff together.
I cannot wait for that.
It's so much fun. It's a blast. Okay, so back to marketing. So what's your tips for social marketing? Because social marketing, like social media, it can be a beast. I'm just now finally embraced Twitter to the place where I like Twitter. At first, I was intimidated by it. Mm-hmm. But now I'm like, oh, man, this is actually kind of the easier one out of all three that I use.
It's funny you would say that because I hated Twitter at first. I was mm-hmm. like, there's no way I am even going to dip my toe in there.
Yep.
And I started just an author that I really admire that when I was first considering independent publishing, I stalked everything she did. And her name is Joanna Penn. And
she's my favorite.
Yes,
I love her.
She's big on Twitter. And she kept talking about how she loved Twitter. I thought, okay, fine. I will look at it, you know.
Yep. Yeah.
And so what I did is I use a scheduler for Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Buffer.
Yep.
And I have the free plan, so you can only really schedule like 10 tweets, but it's really all I need.
Yeah.
And I'll schedule about 10 tweets, and then I'll also, like for my Facebook author page, you can just schedule that right in Facebook. You don't need a scheduler for that.
Yeah.
So I'll schedule posts on Facebook as well. And I keep in mind what my brand is. So it's geeky feminism, basically,
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
geeky female stuff, you know? So I post articles from the Mary Sue, or I do GIFs or things I find on Pinterest that I'm like, oh my gosh, that's so cool. And I look for stories online, or if there's an author friend that's got a new release, I'll share that. And it's just really simple. And for Twitter in particular, the authors that I'm following, it makes it kind of easy, actually, because mm-hmm. I'll schedule out my 10 tweets, but then when I go on Twitter, I'll look at some of my friends to see what they're doing, and I'll just retweet what they're talking about.
Yeah, at first Twitter really intimidated me in the sense I had one whatever we call follower on Twitter, and it was my mother, because I absolutely hated Twitter. I actually had to do it for a work assignment kind of thing, that I had some people like, get on social media, we need to follow somebody and you need to do that because you're the boss. I'm like, great, that's exciting. So I created that account and then I never did bother to keep up with Twitter after that whole process. So my mom was like the only one.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was freaking out a few months ago. I'm like, oh, you have one person on Twitter that follows me. And one of my author friends said, do a Twitter hashtag game. One game, just pick one and do it for a month and you'll get lots of followers. And I ended up doing that and loved it because I'm actually writing. You know, I'm doing little bits of writing.
Yeah.
And you have to be very succinct when you write on Twitter because you only get a certain amount of words and you better make sure they're valuable words, right? So,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It was a lot of fun. So good. I'm glad to know I'm not the only one that just liked it at first, but now it's kind of the easier one out of the three. I use Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Facebook hasn't been super great traction. My Instagram has been blowing up like crazy. And I think it's because people tend to be more visual nowadays. And so
Instagram. Yeah. Well, and Facebook has changed. I mean, the big thing right now is, oh my gosh, the algorithm has changed and nobody's ever going to see my page. And I don't have a huge Facebook following, but what I have started doing, and this, you have to be careful. You can blow through a lot of money on Facebook.
Oh, yes.
And I haven't done ads yet because honestly, I will say this in my opinion, don't start off doing Facebook ads. Like mm-hmm. they're no joke. They're not like they used to be even a year ago. They're really, they take a lot to kind of really know what you're doing.
Yeah, they do. I tried one once and I was like, this is crazy. I'm not an expert in this and I'm not going to do this ever again because it feels like I'm wasting money and I don't even know who I'm targeting. I mean, I don't even know who's on who
exactly.
I'm doing. That's the part I don't like. It doesn't give me enough information to who I engage to make sure I create that ad better for next time.
Exactly. And so what I started doing, I haven't done Facebook ads yet. I'm actually dipping my toe in this month, because an author friend of mine and I, coordinated to create a multi-author ebook box set. And so I'm handling the ads.
Cool.
And I'm like, well, now I've got to do Facebook ads. But what I have been doing that actually I'm starting to see some good traction on is I will boost a post. And at first I was just boosting random things like, oh, I'm sure my followers will love this. And I was getting next to nothing and I couldn't figure out why. And then somebody said, only boost the posts that are already getting good response.
Oh, good idea.
And I thought, oh, okay. So I'm doing that. But I'm also like, I want readers in Canada, New Zealand, Australia, the UK, like not just in America. So when I boost a post, I target people in those countries with specific interests. Like they want, they like Kobo, they like superheroes like Batgirl and Black Widow. And the last time I did that, I got hundreds of people interacting with my post. I've gotten people following my page because if they like it and they're not a follower, I invite them to like the page. And so you can do things like that. And you only need to spend like, I spent $3 for this one boosted post. And I got almost 600 likes. And
that's the intriguing part for me, was that, you know, it really wasn't terribly expensive if you know what you're doing, but it takes a while to get there to know what you're doing. I mean, it's, I feel like when you're an independent author, you almost have to have the money to make the money, you know, the same old scenario. You gotta, you know, at any kind of business you start out, you have to have capital to be able to make more money. And it feels that way too. Cause you know, and I was like, I tried it and I got, it was okay. I mean, I saw how it operated, but I didn't know what I was doing. So I knew that it wasn't going to get a tremendous amount of following off of it. But it's just, it's interesting. Maybe you should do a workshop after you do a few of them and come on and do a workshop for us, because it's very confusing.
It is confusing. I would love to share any knowledge that I have about that. But you are, I mean, it is, I've spent a ton of money making mistakes. I will be very honest with you. Really getting down on myself for it. And then my husband has to remind me, he's like, this is the process. You're not, you know, I am careful. I do consider with whatever knowledge I have, I make a decision. And I make a lot of mistakes, but you have to make those mistakes. You have to spend $20 on a boosted post that does nothing to know why it didn't do anything, so you don't make that mistake next time.
Very true.
And it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard to sit there when you don't have a lot of money to say, oh my gosh, I just wasted $20 on something that didn't work, or 50 or something, you know? So yeah, that is a big challenge.
I keep telling myself it's like a grassroots experience, you know, at the beginning of anything, it's like obscure, you're working on it. And then the hope is that it will grow to a place where it's enormous, you know, and you're getting some benefit out of it. But at the beginning, it's like a grassroots, you know, kind of, and it's just starting out the seeds. And sometimes you have to water and plant and, you know, do all that before, and really weed before you actually see some serious growth in it. So that's kind of the philosophy I'm telling myself, and I'm trying not to look at the money too much.
Oh my gosh, it's hard. Like, and it's also hard to hear. I know. It's hard to hear about all these, it's hard to hear about all these people that are like, you know, oh, my first book, and I was number one for a month. And you're just like, okay, but how? How did you do that? And honestly, it's, and then they tell you, well, I did a mailing list, and I did this, and I'm thinking, well, I did all of that. And I, you know, I broke the top 100 for like a day, and that was great, but man, I didn't stay there for a week, you know?
I know.
And I think it's hard to remember. This is like, it takes a lot of time. There are no overnight successes. When you really drill down into what people have done, they've spent years setting up that one number one for a week or a month kind of experience.
Well, awesome discussion. So let's set the stage, Trish, for your reading, because I'm sure the listeners are just dying to hear reading like I am. So if you would, tell us the title that you're going to read from and set stage up just a little bit. And then I'm going to be quiet and let you do that part and have you go ahead and go into the reading for our listeners.
Okay. Well, I'm going to read from the first book in my Vigilantes series called Serpent Sacrifice. And what's gone on is the main character's name is Alice. Her aunt and her uncle raised her, and her aunt has just been killed. And she's at her aunt's memorial service, and there is a woman named Mrs. Frost that has worked with her aunt for a long time, her aunt is a successful businesswoman, and Alice is following in her footsteps. And Alice has been trained in martial arts by her aunt, and has really been wanting to get out in the world, make a difference. And so this is Mrs. Frost talking to Alice at the aunt's memorial service, and she's about to reveal something very important. "I was a catch in my youth," said a gravelly voice behind her. Alice jumped. Mrs. Frost's usual old-fashioned dress was simple today, an odd serpent brooch clasped just above her right breast. Her green eyes were rimmed in red, as if she'd been crying. But what really shocked Alice was her bare stocking feet and the fact that her white hair was hanging in thick curls to her shoulders. "Do you recognize the woman in the middle?" Mrs. Frost asked, tapping the statuesque woman in the suffragette sash. "No, it's your grandmother. We were quite good friends in our youth." "My grandmother?" Mrs. Frost laughed. "So many things you've not been told. That mother of yours. You didn't know my mother," Alice said, a fire starting to kindle in her belly. "Oh, yes, I did. She, well... did you ever wonder why your aunt did not come get you earlier?" Alice looked down at her hands. "Because your mother did not approve of my influence. She blamed me for what your aunt became." "My aunt was a businesswoman, and though my mother didn't think all that highly of women doing such things, I never heard her say a bad thing about Aunt Diana." Mrs. Frost came thumped on the dense carpet as she walked to a nearby chair. "Make us some drinks, and I will tell you the truth. It is past time you knew it." Alice stared at her a moment, but when those piercing eyes narrowed on Alice, she hurried to the sideboard. "Bourbon, neat." One bourbon in hand and a churning in her belly, Alice handed the drink to the old woman and then sat across from her. Mrs. Frost held the glass in her gnarled hands and stared at Alice's empty ones. After a moment, she snorted and took a long drink from the glass. "This is not the first time vigilantes have been in Jet City," Mrs. Frost began, "although it is the first time their work has caught so much attention. There is a tradition, I suppose you could call it, that began 50 years ago. A woman saw the misery of the poor around her and the callousness of the wealthy. She tried to make a difference from within this community at first, tried to change the minds of the rich, but that failed spectacularly. Then one night, she saw an old man being assaulted by some thugs. She stopped them, and in payment for her kindness, the old man offered to help the woman in any way he could, with whatever she wanted. Feeling that this was a strange but important opportunity, she asked him what he had to offer. Among his extraordinary talents was martial arts. Intrigued, the woman asked for lessons. It was not long before she discovered her talent for it and realized what she could do for the poor and helpless of this city." Mrs. Frost sipped her bourbon as Alice stared at her. This can't be real. I will not bore you with all the details of her transformation, but suffice to say, she became something new to help the people of the city she loved. And when she," Mrs. Frost grinned at her, "when I was too injured, too old to do it anymore, I trained another to take my place." Alice felt her mouth go dry. The memory of something her aunt had said a few days before her death, how something wasn't a gift, it was a burden. "Aunt Diana?" "Yes, she was..." Mrs. Frost's hand shook as she brought the glass to her lips. "She was special. But I neglected to prepare her for how hard it can be to tread the line. Diana was not ready for the damage such work could do to a person in here." She pointed to her heart. "What do you mean?" "It is hard to look at the evil in people's souls night after night and not start to think that perhaps the world would be better off if they simply did not exist. And to know that you have the power to make that happen, that you could do something the police cannot and will not. You could play God. My aunt would never, what, get rid of a killer who twice had been released on a technicality? Did she? Essentially, put him into a coma that he never woke up from. After that, she was more afraid of herself than the criminal she fought. It was over then, I could see it. She refused to quit at first, almost got herself killed. And that is when your uncle and I made her hang it up. Mrs. Frost chuckled. First and only time your uncle and I agreed on anything. Alice shook her head. I can't believe it. She never told me any of this, not a hint. And you, a vigilante. I was not born this old, you know. There's never been a word about this in the press. Do you really think the press would care about or believe the stories of a female vigilante? And the few times anyone, your uncle, for instance, brought a story to their editor, no one was interested. But my aunt would never have kept something like this from me, even if she did not want me doing it. Alice stared at her. She was afraid for you, afraid you would fall prey to her mistakes. But Mrs. Frost leaned forward, pinning Alice with her hard gaze. I think you are made of different stuff than Diana. And if you are willing, you could become the right woman at the right time, as I was. And I'm going to stop there because it goes on a bit more about the suit and all the gadgets that Mrs. Frost has someone making for her.
Oh, I am so intrigued. I love it.
Thank you.
I hope the listeners are intrigued as well. So if you are, guys, go to Trish's website. It'll be in the show notes and pick up her book and finish the story. So Trish, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. We'll definitely have you come back on again. Maybe we'll dive into some of the topics we talked about a little bit deeper. It's like Facebook ads.
That would be great. I would love that.
Awesome. Well, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. We hoped you loved hearing from the author as much as we did. If you did enjoy the author, make sure you find them on social media. Buy their book and write a review. Are you a published author and would like to be featured on the podcast? Visit us at our website to learn more. You can help support the production of this podcast by following us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Share the podcast with your friends. And most importantly, become a supporter. Supporters receive monthly bonus podcasts and a newsletter filled with tips from our authors. To find out more how to become a supporter, visit our website. And finally, I hope you always remember to enjoy the journey. Until next week, this is Vicki J. Carter saying goodbye.